My peoples, welcome to Rants and Randomness. I am Lovey Ajayi, your host and side-eye sorceress. And this is my podcast where I'm talking about the things I'm loving, things I'm judging, and interviewing really interesting people. I'm here at the Chicago Recording Company, as always, bringing y'all the radio voice. And on this episode, I am feeling good about a student who made me his Black History Month project. I'm ranting about how cleanliness is next to godliness, and a lot of people are not being godly. And spotlighting the Queen Bee book that I've contributed to. I am interviewing the amazingly brilliant wellness maven, Latham Thomas. So let's jump into it. It's gonna be a good show. So I'm feeling good about a student who turned me into his Black History Month project. An elementary school class did a Black History Month thing where they made a poster of different figures who they admired. And one of those figures was me. Their teacher posted it on my Facebook fan page and was like, hey, you know, we did this thing. She put one of my students' Black History Month project over about Awesomely Lovey. The children are watching and they love you. And they literally took my picture, they cut it, and then they used construction paper to create our outfits. So they used red construction paper to do a blazer for me, some black jeans, some matching red shoes, and I am holding a copy of my book in this thing. It is so cool because I remember when there wasn't the version of me to look to. So I essentially had to become the example that I needed to see. So knowing that there are kids who see me and know that there's so much that's possible for them, it really made me emotional. I was just like, you know, it's such a testament to the work when not just adults are saying you're dope, but when kids are watching you and making you their project, it's like when my nephew wrote a paper about me. Things like this, I feel like it's like the biggest achievement. It's better than any award because I think about how hopefully my existence makes them understand that the things that they want to see happen can happen for them. So that was just a really, really, really good moment for me. And I had to post it. I posted it on Instagram. I posted it on Facebook. I posted it on Twitter. It's the type of thing I do not mind bragging about because I think it is just a testament of, one, God's grace, but just it is an affirmation of the work that I do, and it's an affirmation of the intention that I set out by being this person. So, yeah, I'm feeling really great about it, and it is awesome. I'm going to actually FaceTime with their class as a thank you because I want them to also see that the people who they're looking to are accessible to them when they need them. So, yeah, man, put that in your pocket in the moments that you feel like your work is hard, in the moments where you don't feel recognized. Even if it's not a class doing a Black History Month project on you, there's a kid in your life who's watching you, who's taking notes, and who is actively proud of the person that you are. All right, so this week's rant, I got to talk about people's hygiene and or lack thereof. I realize that everyone has different standards of hygiene, right? But recently I've been extra hyper-vigilant about it because I realize more and more that because I'm meeting more people every single day because of the nature of the work I do. I'm speaking somewhere. I'm going to conferences. I'm going to events. I'm becoming more visible, so more people have access to me. I'm being exposed to more germs. And, like, it hit me extra because this weekend, I ended up in bed for 3 days because my body just was like, nope, 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 I don't have it for you. It was one of those times when I could barely eat because food tasted gross. And it just made me think, like, whose germs did I get exposed to? I mean, it could be anybody's germs. I'm always everywhere. And then I think about the fact that a week and a half ago, somebody shook my hands with wet hands. I could have died. Like, I immediately went and washed my hands in the bathroom, but I was just like, why were your hands wet? And if your hands were wet, don't shake somebody's hands. Just, you know, dap them up or, you know, elbow knock or something. I realized that, one, not everybody washes their hands all the time, which we all know because we've all seen people who walk out the bathroom after they flush the toilet without actually washing their hands. But I also know that now I'm not sure if I want to shake hands anymore. Like, I'm still coughing. After the wet hand bandit, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to institute a dap-only policy for people when I see them in public. It don't mean I don't love you. It don't mean I don't appreciate you. But for my own health, I need to just start dapping folks up because just, too much handshaking. And let's talk about when we cough. Like right now, I just coughed. I coughed into my elbow. My peoples, let us no longer ever cough into our hands. Don't do that. Don't be the person who is coughing into your palms. It's just terrible. Cough into your elbows because odds are nobody's using their elbows to like rub their face. So, I wanted to be more cognizant of that. I'd be on planes all the time. I bring hand sanitizers with me. But, you know, I think hygiene, even though it is a personal thing, it can become a public health issue. The one person who coughs into their hands ends up shaking somebody else's hand. Next thing you know, we're playing a game of germ telephone. So for the greater good of all of us, let us do better with our hygiene. Let us wash our hands more often. And if you cough, please do not cough into your hands. That is all. All right, so my spotlight for this episode is a dope book called Queen Bee, A Celebration of the Power and Creativity of Beyoncé Knowles Carter. So this book is a project by Veronica Chambers, who's a 4-time New York Times bestselling author. She decided to drop this anthology that's essentially given all the props to Beyoncé because she deserves all the props. And she tapped on me to contribute an essay in this book. I was like, yes, absolutely, whatever you need, I'm doing it, let's go. What's really awesome is my essay is the second in the book right after Veronica's. And that's just dope because that's pretty great place to be. My essay is called Beachella's Proof That Beyoncé is the Greatest Performer Alive. I'm not arguing. And this book also includes essays by folks like Lena Waithe. I mean, come on, who doesn't love Lena? Kid Fury, another amazing, amazing person. Also of the legendary The Read podcast. Brittany Cooper, Melissa Harris Perry. I'm in amazing company, y'all. Amazing company. So the book came out March 9th. It is available currently wherever books are everywhere. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, independent bookstores. It is just a moment of celebration of this woman who's worked tirelessly for over 20 years on her craft and who is now really sitting at the top. She's earned every single accolade, and to have a book dedicated to her and to be a part of that book is an honor for me. It's also solidified the fact that, yes, I have paid my membership dues in the Beehive. I'm paid up till, you know, at least 2024. So, yeah. Also, my quote is in the book flap, right, because I end up calling Queen Bee in all her glory, Beyoncé Giselle of House Knowles, first of her name, snatcher of edges, killer of stages, citizen of Creole Wonderland, legendary black girl queen. Yo, I literally squealed when I saw my name in this book. So you want to make sure you go pick up a copy of Queen Bee. It's a gorgeous book, hardcover. Put it on your shelf, give it to your friends, talk about it for your book club, and if you're a member of the Beehive, you'll really appreciate it. If you're not a member of the Beehive, you'll still appreciate it because there's some amazing writers in there. And I think any moment where we pause in this way to celebrate a black woman who's earned her way to the top is a beautiful moment. So pick up the Queen Bee book. And shout out to Veronica Chambers. Thank you so much for having me and for elevating my work and my voice in this way. You are much appreciated for giving voice and putting into print a lot of Black folks who are wordsmiths. So thank you, Veronica. And yeah, y'all, go order it. Okay, let's see. All right, so I wanted to make sure I keep on sharing fan spotlights and rants because somebody actually messaged me and said they love the fact that I paused to do this because it gives them permission to recognize their own awesome and actually celebrate themselves too. So I was like, let's make sure we bring this back. Dark Lawyer Girl said, it's always a pleasure listening to this podcast. Lovey's humor and wit is refreshing. I also love how she shares about her Nigerian heritage. The episode with Yvette Noel Shore was truly inspiring. Thank you. And yes, that episode I still get messages about that episode. Kim Ransom, really wonderful podcast that lifts the journey of leadership from the vantage and perspective of African-American leaders. There are keys dropped here that can resonate with adults and teens alike. This podcast really gives you the inside scoop on the leadership journey from childhood dreams to adult realities. God bless it. Yes, Kim, and a fellow Chi-Town girl, thank you for listening to this podcast, and that is definitely the intention. I want to make sure that people know what is behind the glow up. Liberty said, this podcast is amazing. I'm in love with the content and everything that you're doing here and promoting in this podcast. As a young Black girl, this is one of my favorites to listen to and feel very inspired. Keep it up. Yay, Liberty. Thank you for listening. So yeah, if y'all drop ratings and reviews in iTunes or any other platform, I might read your review and hear your words about this podcast matter. And if you love this podcast, please keep sharing it and let people know to listen to it, to pick up these gems that my guests be dropping, and just take a moment to learn the stories of amazing people. You may remember from last year that I told you about an innovative new product called Black Girl Sunscreen. Well, believe it or not, summer is going to be here very soon. Praise God, because this winter needs to just go. And it's time to protect your skin again from the relentless sun. To be quite honest, you're supposed to protect your skin 365 days a year, right? So, Black Girl Sunscreen is an everyday SPF 30 moisturizer for the face and body, specifically designed for us. Why? Because they eliminated the telltale white residue that happens when you use sunscreen that is not formulated for Black skin. I speak from experience when I tell you this. This sunscreen rubs in completely. I'm using it today, actually. Now listen, a lot of folks still think that people of color don't need sunscreen. Thanks to our melanin magic, we do have some natural protection from the sun's harmful rays. But make no mistake about it, no one is immune to the damage caused by the sun. Not even us magical melanated folks. We still burn and are susceptible to sun-induced damage such as sunspots, premature aging, lines, hyperpigmentation, and melanoma. The moral of this story is that we all need to protect our skin, and Black Girl Sunscreen has infused natural ingredients such as jojoba, cocoa, shea butter, avocado, and carrot seed juice to offer us a solution. If that wasn't enough, they're doing it fragrance-free, environmentally friendly, and without disrupting your hormones. I've been using it since last year. It's amazing. So check them out at blackgirlsunscreen.com or on any social media platform with the handle @blackgirlsunscreen. That's BlackGirlSunscreen. You won't regret it. And if you use the code LUVBGS, you can get 20% off right now. And you can start looking good and feeling good in the sun. And for all my Nigerians out there, we have some exciting news. You can actually find Black Girl Sunscreen across Nigeria in Casabella stores. So go check it out. Again, the code is LUVBGS to get 20% off Black Girl Sunscreen. Stock up and get ready. And use it actually every day. You don't need to wait till summer. Use sunscreen every single day. All right? Cool. Hey, y'all, about to get into our guest interview. Her audio was kind of weird in different places, but stick with it. Listen through it. It's really good. You still don't want to miss out on what she has to say. All right, so, Rance fam, I want to Welcome Latham Thomas to the show. Excited to have her on. She's also known as the Glow Maven, but I'm gonna let y'all know her bio because this lady right here is epicness in the flesh. Latham Thomas is a celebrity wellness and lifestyle maven and birth doula, transforming not only how women give birth to their babies, but how they give rise to the best version of themselves. Named one of Oprah Winfrey's Super Soul 100, an enlightened group of leaders elevating humanity with their work, Latham is helping women embrace optimal wellness and spiritual glow. She is the founder of Mama Glow, a lifestyle brand and highly regarded website and women's center in Brooklyn, New York, offering inspiration, education, and holistic services for expectant new mothers. Latham also released her book, right? You are a two-time best-selling author. You have a book called Own Your Glow, A Soulful Guide to Luminous Living and Crowning the Queen Within, which is your latest one. And you released your first meditation album, Sounds True, this April, called Meditations, Guided Meditations for Rest and Renewal. Yo, like Latham's clients are like Alicia Keys, DJ Khaled, Rebecca Minkoff. The lady is a revolution within herself because she practices radical self-care. Latham, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, babe. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh. I love everything that you do and what you stand for. So I always start by asking my guests, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
So when I was little, actually, my mom, my aunt, and my great aunt were all pregnant at the same time. And so I was 4 years old, and my dramatic play with my cousin, who was like maybe 9 months older than me, was that we would put Cabbage Patch dolls under our shirts, and then we would deliver each other's babies. So I thought that, I think for like a sliver of my life, I was like, oh, maybe I'll just like deliver babies. But then, you know, as I grew up, I thought I would be in the sciences, but I came back to the baby thing. So I think that that's what it was. It stuck.
So you were four, and you were like, I want to actually just be the person that's bringing kids to this world.
Yes, because, you know, like when you're 4 years old, you're only at the height of people's bellies anyway, right? So I was constantly bumping into my mom's belly. And so, yeah, I think like that was such a fascinating time in my life. And my mom taught me a lot about the anatomy, and I was so excited. And so when every chance that I got, I would talk to people about it. And so she reminded me, she's like, you know, when you would walk up to people and they would say, oh, your sister's in your mother's belly, you would correct them and say, no, my sister's in my mother's uterus and she's going to come out of her vagina.
Stop
so
it.
So I was
at
very
four?
Into it. Yes, four.
How did that go off in school? Were you the kid who correcting other kids and giving them anatomy lessons?
You know, I did do anatomy lessons, but yeah, that didn't go over too well. But you know, because you're supposed to use different words in school. But yeah, I always was into the sciences. I was always into anatomy at a really early age. I think my mom definitely blessed me with that when she gave me those books and, you know, and sort of educated me as a youngin.
Do you remember what book she gave you?
You know what? They were like these little picture books, and there was a show called My Mom's Having a Baby. It was a cartoon, and it had like a little jingle. I loved this show, and it kind of prepared me for being a big sister. By the way, I wasn't a great big sister. When my sister arrived, I was like, send her back. I was just kidding. Like, I don't like this, right? But I got used to her after a few weeks. But I think the entire process leading up to was really fascinating for me.
How so?
It was just more like, you know, the magic of it, the mystery of the body, the fact that like her belly was constantly growing. Even when I would touch it and she would say, oh, the baby's moving now. And then I would be able to like feel my sister kicking. Like that was really just like incredible. And so that imprinted me. I still remember those moments. And I was, you know, that was like, you know, 30 something years ago.
So this followed you all through high school and you kept on with this dream. When you got to college, what did you major in?
When I got to college, I majored in visual arts and environmental science. And so, you know, I'm really, you know, I really love the sciences. I'm really into like evidence-based research. I love that. But I also love the ethereal and I also love the arts. And so I did, actually, it's so crazy. I just this weekend framed a woodblock print that I made like 20 years ago in college. And I'm like, why did this not get framed before? I don't know. And I don't know how I traveled with it all these years and it didn't get ruined. But yeah, so I majored in visual arts, and, you know, in the labs, we would have, like, if you think about, like, science labs, it's really quiet and you have to be really exact and you have to go in and you can't really make it a party. And so that part of my life, I got fulfilled when I would go to the art studio. And when I would go there, we would be playing, like, you know, like Slum Village and like Jay-Z and whatever. And then our friends would be in there. We'd all be doing our art projects really late at night. And it was more of a turn up. So I kind of got my balance of like quiet and turn up in college.
So you graduate with what degree?
With a dual degree in visual arts and environmental science from Columbia University.
Yo, you were actually really focused. You were one of the people who went into college and graduated with the degree, with the major that they started with.
I did. I did. I think, like, I was surrounded also by people who were so focused. There was, like, kids in our school who were, like, already working, who already had jobs. And I was like, dude, you're working and going to school? Like, I had, like, my little jobs at school. You know how you get, like, a university campus job? I had stuff like that. But there were kids who were working in, like, institutions, like,
oh, wow,
working at J.P. Morgan and graduating early. So I felt, like, late. You know what I mean? The fact that I graduated on time. Yeah, it was, like, there was just a level of, I think there was a level of Black excellence, because when I look at all the people that I was in school with, all of them are doing such amazing things. And there was a level of focus and commitment. And, you know, coming from the families that we come from, there's just an expectation that you perform and that you achieve, because some of us are the first, you know, to enter these institutions, or the first to graduate college, or just like paving a way for the kids who will come after us from our neighborhoods and communities. So it was like, I had that pressure. And I also went to boarding school before that in Colorado. So I just had that added pressure to succeed.
So were you from Colorado?
Girl, no, I'm from Oakland.
Yeah. So tell me, how did you end up in boarding school in Colorado?
Okay, because my mother is, like, a wizard, right? Like, she was like, look, you know, she recognized very early something that I think that is a big topic of discussion these days around these white spaces where we're missing, right? And she talked about, like, these boys clubs that were formed in the formative years of, you know, the lives of, like, white men. Like, they will go into these institutions and they become friends with people who they end up basically transforming the world with, for better or for worse, right? And so they all hire each other, they all work together, they loan each other money, they do all these things together, but their relationships start when they go to these boarding schools, these elite boarding schools, and when they go to university together. And so she was like, you need to be in those settings. And so you need to be around these people who, you know, have access and wealth, and you need to be exposed to that, and you need to also claim that for yourself. And so she, you know, made me apply for this merit scholarship to attend this school. And I was like, Mom, it's in Colorado. Like, why would I do that, right? Because I wanted to go to school with all my friends locally. And she was like, no, we're going to do this. You're gonna apply, because this is a great opportunity. And lo and behold, I received the merit scholarship. And so that meant that for 4 years, all my tuition was covered for boarding school. And then all we had to pay for was like my books and my flights home. So my mom was like, you're going, you know? So
how was boarding school?
It was actually really cool. There was a bunch of people from my hometown who were there. So I did have like a lot of like kind of older brothers from Oakland. It was very, there was definitely like under 10 Black people in the entire school. And that was interesting, because I came from, you know, Oakland is just like, it's Black, you know, it's like blackety Black. So it was like really, it was a shift, you know, but it was also one where I kind of was primed for the experiences I would have later in life. Like, I would be able to be very comfortable in the corporate settings that I have to flow through, and in these other kind of elite spaces. I was just prepared for that. And then also for like college, because of the workload, you know, you're really prepared being in that kind of like college preparatory setting in a boarding school. You just learn how to be really responsible and
you know, your parents aren't there, so you're doing everything yourself, like starting at 14. And like the things that I would do, like my chores at home, it was like I had to do these things and then some to look after myself in boarding school.
All right, so boarding school essentially forced you to grow up in a way where you had to become responsible for yourself.
Yeah, I had to become really responsible really early on. And I was also the eldest, right? And, you know, birth order is so important, right? Like the eldest child is always the, you know, like assumes responsibility, assumes all, you know, it's like if something happens in the house, it's my fault, right? Even if I'm not there, like my sister, I'm like, yo, she's in the house, actually. She had to have done it. But, yeah, so I think that that was really, you know, part of developing a drive that I had, right? And also I think just having, like, a mother who is an Aries and, like, doesn't take no for an answer also, like, really instilled in me this this dedication to push forward.
All right, so you graduated from college, got your visual arts and environmental science degree. What was next for you?
So what was next, at the time I was working with like the Brooklyn Center for the Urban Environment and the Audubon Center, just writing like curriculum in science for early childhood education. And I was doing that with like the New York City Board of Education as well. And then I met my son's father, and he also was at Columbia, but like years before me. And so we had some like different, you know, like circles kind of like started to, you know, sort of encircle each other, communities started to encircle each other, and we ended up meeting. And, you know, it didn't take us long before we ended up pregnant with my son. And so I was still young, you know, I was like 23, and I wasn't planning to have a child then, but it was definitely not wanted. You know, I wanted my son, but I was totally like, okay, I'm still a kid. I still need my mom's help, you know? And again, you know, I was catapulted into adulthood by becoming a mother at 23. And so I had my son in New York City. I was pregnant at during a time where, you know, most people will want to go home, but I was really determined to live here and to be in New York. And so I stayed in New York. I delivered him in this birth center, which is like on 14th Street. It's since closed, but it's right next door to this like very popular nightclub called the Darby or Up and Down. So my son was always thinking he was born in a nightclub. But and then, you know, this, which I guess matches the fact that he's a DJ now. But the amazing thing about it, though, was that it was a freestanding birth center. And I went there to deliver my baby. 6 hours later, I was like walking home, you
what?
Know, and there was just, yes. And it was amazing because it was like midwives and there were nurses. They had doulas as part of the experience. I didn't have a doula because I had so much education that attending this place for your birth, you had to do 21 hours of education to deliver there.
Okay.
So I felt, and I was just fresh out of school. So, you know, I was like very studious about the whole process. And that became, I think, the solidifying factor for me, like my son's birth being so incredible, having like been visited by my ancestors, like right at the time of transition into delivery.
Tell me that. Tell me about that. I want to know more about that.
It was beautiful. It was like, so my water broke at 12:30 a.m.
Okay.
And after walking around for like, I don't know, 6-7 hours all day, because walking really helps the baby settle into the pelvis. And so he was already a week late and it was the full moon. And so I was like, okay, this is a really good time to try to like get this baby to come. Full moons, a lot of babies are born in the full moon because of the pressure in the air. And so you'll find that like a lot of places are full, you know, when it's a full moon with women going into labor. So I was hoping to like align with that energy. And I got home and I had been walking all day and I was like, you know, this is unfair. I'm tired. Like this baby needs to hurry up and come. We wanted to go on vacation. And so we were like, you know what? You're on punishment when you get here because we're supposed to be already gone. And so anyway, I'm sitting in the bed and I said to myself, you know, I just said, you know, I'm just going to pray. And then I said, God, you know, I just would love a sign because I just don't know why this baby is still inside at this point. I'm ready. I would really love to meet him. And 20 minutes later, I was listening to Mahalia Jackson, 20 minutes later, my water broke.
Whoa.
And my son's father was like, you're peeing in the bed. I was like, no, I'm not peeing in the bed. He said, get out the bed. So I got out and I stood up. And it was like, if you ever saw Sex and the City where Miranda, when her water broke, it was like that. It was like a gush onto the floor. I was like, oh my God, it's on TV. So then at that point, we were like excited. So we were calling people, like promoters, like, yo, it's going down. The baby's coming, you know. So we're calling all our family. I'm not tired at all. I'm so wired because I know the baby's coming soon. And I call the midwives and they're like, you need to go to sleep because it's going to be work later. And I was like, girl, I'm not tired. I stayed up, of course, and watched jazz documentaries till like 6 a.m. And then finally I start feeling something around 6:30 a.m. I go take a shower. You know, I'm just kind of pacing, doing my thing. And then I start to wake people up in the house because I was like, okay, it's getting intense. Around 8 a.m., it was getting intense. 9 o'clock, I think we left. Okay, so we're in the taxi, right? And I'm like, it's 7 blocks, you guys. It's not that crazy. Like, let's just, you know, let's just get there. And we get there, and then the midwives just watch very calmly, right, for this 10-minute period as I enter into the room. And then while I'm in there, I would say probably close to 1 o'clock. My son was born at 1:09. At that time, I felt this, right before I was going to push, Lovey, I felt this like ring in the shape of a horseshoe, and it was surrounding me, but from above. If you can imagine, like, when somebody's staring at you so hard that you're like, yo, I'm about to ignite, who is looking at me, right?
Yeah.
I felt this heat, and I look up, and I see this halo of ancestors. And this is before Black Panther, but they had their, they were cloaked in these robes, and then they had their arms like across them, like Wakanda style. It was crazy. This is way before, by the way. This is like decades
wow.
before. My son's 15, and they were looking down at me. And I said, "I want to go up there." And I pointed, and everybody in the room saw that. And I felt myself ascend out of my body, and I was watching the whole process unfold.
Whoa!
And it was crazy. It was a psychic thing. It was this like primal experience, and it was like when people say they go to, you know, Central or South America to do peyote or ayahuasca or do this journey medicine with shamans, like we have access to that in birth, right?
Mm.
So I've never done drugs, but I was able to access those same chemicals, right, and have a similar sort of transformative experience. So my son was born then like a few minutes later, and
wow.
it was magical. And I was like, okay, I have to protect this for women. Like it was clear to me, right? That this was like, nobody talks about this. They talk about how painful, they talk about, you know, messy and all these things, but they never talk about like this spiritual experience that I felt. And so I wanted to make sure I could help other women with that.
What? That's amazing. So do you even remember pain in childbirth, or was it just a pure spiritual, beautiful experience for you?
No, I remember the pain. People say that you don't remember it. Like, I can't locate it physically in my body like you can. I mean, there's these incredible endorphins that make it so that you don't recall the pain, but you do remember being in pain. And I do remember that I was like, okay, to everybody in the room, I was like, I just want to remind everybody that if I say I want to do this again anytime soon, just tell me not to, right? Like, so I said, before I forget what this feels like, just tell me don't do this again soon. So, but once he was born, of course, like 20 minutes later, I was like, I would love to do this again. You know, you forget, you really truly forget. So, but yes, I do remember that it was intense. It was not like a walk in the park.
So what did you name him?
But I named him Fulano. And that came through a dream. His dad had dreamt of the Fulani people from North Africa and their travels and how they were kind of like outcasts but nomadic. And so he was like, I think that's his name. And so we woke up that day and we're like, that's his name. And So when he was born, we were like, yep, he looks like that. Let's keep that name.
What? He actually does look like he could possibly be Fulani. So his birth really launched this next phase into your mission to become a wellness maven and maternity guru and just the person who helps people experience this better than they were before. Tell me more. Like, what did you do next once you had Fulano? Like, how did that spur you into essentially what became Mama Glow?
Yeah. So Fulano always takes credit. He's like, you know, by the way, I'm the reason we have Mama Glow. He tells people that. it's true. But so what happened after was, like, during the times that he would be sleeping and napping as he got a little bit older was when I would focus on my dreams, right? Like, when he was dreaming, I would be dreaming. But I would be, like, really mapping out business and what it could become. And I knew that, like, women needed some handholding, and I knew that the process in New York City was super hard to navigate, and it shouldn't have been. And this is a time where people weren't using the internet, right? Like, we use the internet and our phones for everything, and it's, like, so easy. But back then, people were not doing that. They were, like, you know, going to the telephone book, which is, like, a relic now. They were going, asking people for referrals. And it was just like word of mouth, right? So people didn't trust the internet then. So it was really harder. So I had to get all of my resources sort of by hand, you know, and by trial and error. And then that kind of became the rudiments of like the first book that I wrote through all of my sort of exercises, all the things that I learned, the diet that I followed, like all the things that I did yoga and lifestyle wise, I put into the first book, Mama Glow. And while I was writing that book or finishing that book, I had this idea to do a film festival that would focus around birth. And so we launched that with Christy Turlington Burns, who has Every Mother Counts as an organization for maternal health. And then we also had Felita E. Banks, who was doing a lot of work in Sierra Leone at the time around the maternal crisis there. And we had this amazing festival in the Hamptons. We looked at all these films from around the world. And that was like kind of the opening. It was like, whoa, there's a lot that we can do here. People want this information. It's outside of just this idea of hosting one event, right? Then I went on to do like another event like that with Ricky Lake and Abby Epstein for The Business of Being Born. And that was like 250 people showed up for that. We were like, wait a minute, people really want to know this information. So then I launched a website that would become Mama Glow, and it had like information, resources. And then I also launched the doula aspect of that. I was still doing it kind of on the low, you know what I mean? Like not as seriously, but then I launched it into the website.
All right, so once you had Fulano, how did you get trained to become an actual doula?
Yes. So this is a really great story, actually. I had gone to this ashram to celebrate my birthday, but also to teach. It was a health-related weekend, and I was, like, speaking and leading some workshops at this ashram. And when I got there, it was actually my birthday. And so they did this ceremony, this like puja, where they like, you know, do a blessing and prayer over you. And kind of, it's like a kickoff ritual. And after that, there was this little Vedic astrologer, and he was like, I need to do your reading. And I was like, okay, cool. So he takes me into this little hut, and like, I'm like, okay, I'm a little nervous because like, you know, I could feel the walls with all of, like, the entire space was like this small hut, and I could feel all four walls, like, just by reaching in front of me, and I was getting claustrophobic, but I sat there anyway and just breathed through it, and he started sharing information with me. It was mostly gibberish. I couldn't understand most, but then there were certain moments where he was totally clear, and one of the things he said with total clarity was, you're supposed to mother the mother.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, okay. I get that, but I'm already doing that. He was like, no,
in a deeper way, you're supposed to mother the mother. So he gave me some numbers, which I wrote down, and he said, you know, these are going to be really significant numbers in your life, and so just, like, look out for them. Somebody says that to you, you're, like, looking everywhere for signs, right?
Right.
So everywhere I look, I'm like, okay, there's eight of these. Like, does that mean something? Like, you know? And so that lasted probably until I got home. And then once I got home, I got back into my groove. And what ended up happening was a few days later after I got settled in, I got an email. And you know how back in the day, I don't know if you recall this, but way back in the day, we didn't check our emails every day. It was like an event to check your email, right? Like you would be like, oh, I think I'm going to open my computer and check my electronic mail, right? And so I did that, right? Which was like a once a week thing or whatever. And I opened it up and there was some email there and it wasn't a lot like today, right? And there was a message and it said, you've been accepted to this doula fellowship program. Mm. Mind you, Lovey, I don't remember applying. Okay. So I think that like part of me just like filled out this thing. I don't remember even filling out the application, but I was accepted to this program. And then I looked at the date and the date was aligned with one of the dates that he gave me, like one of my like star dates. Right. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. And so I just took it from God. Like I understand I'll be obedient. I'll follow the call, right? I'm a Taurus. We're super stubborn. Like people for years were asking me to serve in this way. And I just was kind of like not ready. And so in this moment, I decided, I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to do this program. I'm going to accept the fellowship and I'm going to commit to this work.
Wow. You don't even, mm-hmm. This is nuts. You essentially got something dropped in your lap to end up changing your whole life.
My whole life. Yeah. My whole life.
And what was the biggest lesson from that doula fellowship?
I think the biggest lesson from that was really like, it was, well, I found my first birth partner who I did work with. We would tandem births together. And I think the biggest lesson was in trusting myself, like that this was supposed to happen. Like I was supposed to be doing this work. And I did continue, you know, like it became like, it was almost like instantaneous because I was already teaching these prenatal yoga classes and there was all this other stuff going on. I had nutrition clients that were pregnant. So I had a steady stream of people like off the bat. Like I had to take like 4 births a month, like off the bat, which was crazy, by the way. I think most people do 1 birth a month. I was doing 4. And so I think that was the biggest piece of like trusting and the listening. You know, so often I think like, we get signals, right, constantly through our body. Our body sends us very clear signals about when we're aligned with something. We get universal signals. We get signals through, you know, people who shelter our lives with, like, special medicine to remind us of what we're supposed to be doing on our path. And sometimes we just don't listen, right? And so for me, it was about listening and not being stubborn, you know, like not, like knowing that, you know, a calling is different from a passion, right? And I think that we often conflate the two. People will think, oh, I'm passionate about this thing. But, you know, passion makes you excited about something. But a calling is like getting up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. and, you know, waking up to go serve someone who's in labor, right? Mm. Like, I'm not passionate about that. I'm called to do that. Mm. You know what I mean? A calling is, you know, when someone is, you know, like 30 hours in labor and you have been there the whole time and you're just helping them move through. And you're also like, you know, completely depleted at this point, right? And then the next 2 weeks later, you have another birth, right? Like that's a calling. It's not really like a passion. And I think that, you know, part of what a lot of us haven't realized that are, you know, pursuing the work that we do, our life's work, is sometimes we come to it through passion, like something that we're excited about, but the actual commitment and the sustained commitment is through, is because you're called to do so. You know, there's definitely days that I do not want to get up in the morning or that I, you know, feel like I would rather do something else, but I've been called to do it. Right. And so I'm obedient to that call.
So explain to people what a doula is. What is your duty as a doula?
Yes. So a doula provides educational support, advocacy, physical support, emotional support, and education, really to help a laboring mother or couple prepare themselves for the process. We usually work with people when they're in, I would say, like, a lot of people contract by like 20 to 25 weeks pregnancy, and then they start to work with a practitioner, a doula, to support them educationally and prepare them for the process of labor and birth. And then we support in the early postpartum period as well, making sure that, you know, breastfeeding is established if moms are deciding to breastfeed, and to make sure that they're healthy and the outcome went smoothly. And then we also sort of track for mental health and perinatal mood disorders, because those things can happen along the birth continuum just because of how our society is set up. A lot of women don't have support. A lot of women have to go back to work 10 days after birth in this country. So we're there to kind of help fill some of the policy gaps that occur as a result of, like, our modern living that is, you know, anti-woman. So we really show up to help support women so they feel really fulfilled and that they can have an extra set of hands and someone who's knowledgeable about what they're experiencing while they go through it.
So while a woman is in childbirth, her doula is her advocate, the person who's telling the doctor, no, this is what she wants. No, this is what she doesn't want. Here's what she needs. Why,
exactly.
Why are doulas now a matter of, like, life and death, especially for Black women?
Yeah, so it's really interesting that in the past, I would say 2 years, there's been a spotlight on Black maternal health. There's been a 25-year increase in the maternal mortality as it relates to Black women.
Mm.
And it's gotten to a critical mass, right? And so the CDC has declared a state of emergency for Black women.
Whoa.
And that we are 3 to 4 times more likely than white women to die during childbirth or due to childbirth-related causes. That number jumped to 12 times in New York City.
Oh, my gosh.
That number, yeah. That number is 5 times in the UK. So we know that this is not just a U.S. phenomenon. This is a global phenomenon. But this is happening here. And in places where you would think there's so much access and so much resource, why are Black women dying, right? We know that it's not, you know, economics aren't protecting us. Education isn't protecting us. Whereas with white women, these are protective factors, right? Having a high school education and having, you know, economic stability, having a partnered relationship. All of these things actually improve the birth outcomes for white women. But when it comes to Black women, none of these things factor.
Mm.
We can have Black women who are uber successful and wealthy, like Serena Williams, have her life in danger. And you could have, you know, women who are, you know, economically challenged or have, like, you know, not a lot of economic ability, and they have the same you know, outcome potentially, right? And so that doesn't make sense. But what we know is that it's because of racial bias. We know that there's been a longstanding look, there's been a longstanding gaze on Black women's bodies as stronger, and that we don't feel pain, and that these are from medical journals from like the 17 and 1800s. Like, these are beliefs that have been embedded in the medical system for hundreds of years. And we've been treated in this way that we could be dismissed. And so when a woman asks for pain medication, for instance, right, she might wait for hours versus her white counterpart who will get it immediately, right? Or we'll see, for instance, a woman who will, you know, in surgery, like some of her internal, she might get like a laceration internally that might go completely unnoticed.
Oh my gosh.
You know, a lot of things happen. And so, but a lot of Black women are dying, not when they leave the hospital, inside a hospital.
Hmm.
And sometimes within, you know, when they go home, right, as a result of some of the surgical outcomes, infection, all kinds of things. But mainly what the doula's job is really in this instance is to be on the front lines, to really be able to look for and help the doctors in this sense be able to
track markers that might put a woman at risk. So if a woman is at risk for high blood pressure, for instance, which is called preeclampsia in pregnancy, this can lead to seizures and it could lead to death, right? So it's something that we'd like to get a hold of early on. And if we see that a mom has high blood pressure, the only cure is to deliver the baby. So lots of times, you know, women are super stressed. They are dealing with all kinds of pressures. And so we'll see a lot of moms fall into that sort of that window of being preeclamptic. What also happens is that we see physical markers of this. Like you'll see older face, hands that are swollen, feet that are swollen. If you're going to the doctor not that frequently, they might not see these things, right? But your doula will, right? And so the doula can say, okay, let's test your urine. Let's do these, like all these diagnostic tests with the doctor and be able to confirm something and course correct. Right. So it's our job to kind of help fill in these gaps, because if the patients aren't really clear that something's wrong and doctors aren't really paying attention, or they can't pay attention because they're overworked, or they're just like not, you know, they don't have the bedside manner or the care for these women, then we have to fill those gaps. Right. And not to say that all the weight falls on a doula and that this is really their job is to protect, you know, women from dying. We can't do that by ourselves. But I would say that it's a critically important role in this stage that we're in the maternal health crisis, because we know that Black women are the ones that are dying. We see the numbers are staggering, right? And so if we can get it right for Black women, everybody's health improves. Mm. So I like us to focus on us. And so when I say that, I'm thinking about like, you know, the Disability Act, right? Like when they wanted to put curb cuts in sidewalks, like people were with like, oh, why would we do that? It's going to like destroy, you know, the infrastructure. But guess what? They ended up putting curb cuts in sidewalks, right? So when you get to the corner, if you're in a wheelchair, you can dip down and then cross the street and get to the other side. That's a life decision if you're disabled, right? But guess who benefits now? Women. Everybody. Who have strollers, right? Women who are pushing their, you know, older women pushing their groceries in a little cart, you know, kids on their little tricycles and you know, bicycles. Everybody, right, benefits, because we were working to, like, meet the needs of the marginalized, right? And so if we think about this crisis in the same way, like, it's not a Black women's issue, it's a human rights issue. Mm. And if we look at it like, okay, we need to get this right for Black women, everybody will benefit. So that's really what I believe the role of the doula now is, to make sure that they're prepared to navigate the waters and serve the unique needs of Black women specifically, so that they can make sure that not only they survive the birth, but they thrive afterwards, right? Right. And that process is protected, and that they understand what informed consent looks like. They understand what their rights are. They understand how to advocate for themselves and for the people in the room to be able to advocate, because we see a lot of layers of bias play out and racism. We see where Black fathers don't feel safe in being able to speak up for their partners because of being called, with the security being called on them.
Oh, wow.
So people don't realize that this is so layered, and separation is really something that happens. And we see this happening in our government, right? This happens in the birth space, where a mother will be separated from the people who love her so that she's, you know, in a situation where she's dominated or she's coerced. But, you know, you can't make an informed decision and you can't really consent, you know, if you don't have all the information. And what happens is that, you know, our women won't get the information that they need to make a decision. It'll be forced upon them. So more likely they're being coerced, or they're cooperating, but they're not consenting, right? And so we need to have these conversations about consent, you know, and Me Too in spaces like the hospital too, because we see a lot of birth trauma happen where women are re-traumatized who have had, you know, sexual or domestic abuse, like all types of things that have happened that can be re-triggered in these settings because of how they're dominant and how they're, you know, white male centric, right? So there's this supremacy that that thrives in the medical system, and people don't want to acknowledge that.
Wow.
And so we need to find protective factors for Black women specifically, because we know that they used to experiment on our bodies. Like, we have reasons for not trusting the system, right?
Yeah.
Ancestrally, so.
So you've doulaed, you've been doula for, like, Saad Khalid. I remember, like, when he was being born, DJ Khaled was on Snapchat, and you were in the room. And,
yes.
And you've been doula for Alicia Keys. For regular women, for the people who are not celebrities, for the people who are not wealthy, how do they have access to doulas and doula services?
So, you know, doulas should be accessible for all people. And I'm looking, and our work is really to democratize it, right? And so we have doulas at every single financial bracket, right? Like, wherever you are and whatever you can pay, we can offer you a doula to support you. So to us, that's critically important to make sure that the people who need it most have access, and the people who can afford it, you know, we can do a sliding scale so that those who can afford it makes up for those who can't, right? So to me, it's critically important to make sure that we serve everyone so that all women can have the experience that it seems like very few have access to, right? And to me, you know, when I see, like, you know, someone like Khaled, for instance, it was beautiful for him to share that experience through social media, because a lot of people experience, you know, natural birth for the first time just watching that video, right? Mm. That was their entry point to, like, what birth could be. And so I love when we have those opportunities to sort of shift culture and to bring a conversation forth about, you know, about birth in a positive light. But I also want to make sure that you have people who are on the fringes and people who are underserved, like, get the services that they need, and not like a diminished form of the service, who get the exact same service, right? Because everybody, it's so important how you're born, and everybody deserves to feel honored in their birth. Every woman deserves to feel transformed and deserves to feel safety and empowered, right, through that process. And what's happening is that we're doing the opposite to women. We're, you know, in our current medical model, we're not really thinking about the fact that when women come on the other side of this process, that they're traumatized, right?
Mm, yeah,
you know,
right.
We need to, I mean, and then they're expected to, by the way, like, breastfeed and do everything correctly and then go home and cook and clean and then go back to work. Like, they're expected to do so much, but they're not even supported in this transition, right? Which is a holy transition. Every culture in the world looks at birth in this way of reverence, right? And then here, we look at it like, what's your number on your bracelet, right?
Mm.
Like, what, like, you're a stat, or you're just a, you know, you're just a another person that's in here on the conveyor belt, right? We cannot look at these life events in this way, right? We have to, so for me and in the doula movement, really it's about reclaiming our bodies as sacred. It's about reclaiming this process as holy and protecting it, right? Protecting the sanctity for these women, so that they can actually unfold their superpowers when they, you know, when they go through this. Because you've seen other women where when they come on the other side of birth, they feel really powerful, right? That's a birthright of every single woman. I want every woman to feel that. And in addition to just, you know, making sure that everyone is healthy on the other side, we want to make sure also that everybody feels empowered. Like, this is, because, you know, birth is connected to everything else. If you don't feel powerful when you come on the other side of birth, it's really also hard to ask for a raise.
Mm.
It's hard to ask for the things that you want. It's hard to, you know, speak up for yourself, right? When you felt like you couldn't speak up for yourself in a pivotal transition like birth, right? So we have to start to get this right. And we do have to make it accessible to all people, which is part of why we structure our doula immersion program the way that we do, and our doula services, so that everybody can have someone. It's really important that everybody can have someone.
And that's what Mama Glow does.
Yes.
How do people find out more about Mama Globe? Because you've been running your doula services now out of in Brooklyn.
Yes, exactly. So we have this space in Brooklyn where we have a lot of programs that are like centered in self-care and community and education. But we also have our doula immersion program, which runs there. It's pretty much monthly. And people can come. We have people from around the world who come. We have all six continents represented. We need somebody from Antarctica. I know nobody really lives there, but if we need somebody from Antarctica, we can say we have all continents. The world is represented. And we have every corner of the United States represented, right? Everybody comes from everywhere. And so we also do it in L.A., and we're coming up in Paris in April with the training, too. So, you know, you can just join in wherever, and everyone's welcome. You don't have to have previous experience. The criteria is an open heart and a willingness to serve.
Open heart and willingness to serve, which is kind of your life motto, because you are constantly serving others and just inspiring people to live better. So,
but that's what you do too, Lovey.
I think it's really key, because you just have this really nurturing and calming spirit. Anytime somebody is in your midst, they can't help but feel slightly better than they did, than they felt before, just because you just have this aura about you that is just so soothing. From the first time I met you, I was like, man, I just want to just sit and chill.
I know. And then I got to be on tour with you.
Yes, for the Together tour. Oh, and every day before our tour started, we would... Latham would basically relax us with these. What are those metal prongs that you use?
Oh, I use a tuning fork. Yeah.
Yo, the tuning forks are so common for life. Oh my goodness, I don't understand how you sometimes will turn up, but I'm like, yo, Latham just makes you want to just get your life together.
Oh, lovey, and you remind us all the time, constantly, to just check how we're thinking, to examine ourselves, to constantly be better. I mean, to write the Do Better manual, but also to be embodying it every day, and then to be reminding us every day to, like, you know, check yourself real quick. Make sure you ain't out here looking the fool. you know what I'm saying? It's just, I'm also deeply inspired that you walk in your truth. You don't bite your tongue. You know what I mean? You let everything come as you feel called to put it out into the world. And I believe that the words that you use, because, you know, Lovey is a gifted writer, we know this, a cultural critic, and I think a seer. Like, I really do think that you see sort of the human condition, and you find a way to package in a snackable way the human condition for us to, like, examine, but also to laugh. And that's a gift. Because
you
really do allow us, like, when there's times where it's like, how can I find a way through this moment that's so, like, intense or ugly to look at? You find a way to examine it and speak truth to it, but also to make us laugh.
Oh,
and I'm just so thankful for that. Because that's medicine too, Lovey. Like, whether you know that that's, like, you know, part of your, you know, wellness sorcery or not, that is really, like, a lot of people I know have even said, and I'm sure you've heard this directly from fans, a lot of people will say, like, you know, I got through this because of Lovey, or I was sad and I went to the blog, or I was, you know, upset and I went to the podcast, whatever it is, right? You have a way in, and I know, like, the way I listen to the podcast is, like, if I have to do chores or if I'm flying or whatever, I just listen, you know, and it just keeps me uplifted. So this is what we do collectively, but you are so deep into your calling, and it's so beautiful to see. Like, on a daily, I'm so thankful for social media, because it allows us to get the richness of what you can offer us. So thank you.
Oh my gosh, you just made my whole heart smile. Thank you so much. And I mean, I'm inspired by you, because you show a different type of care for the world, like the deep. That whole mother and the mother, you are absolutely doing that every single day. And you've actually inspired me. You're half the reason why I ask my guests, what do you do to take care of yourself, as, like, the clothes in question, because how you embody self-care, not just as a buzzword, but as life itself. I mean, I was like, yo, I got to really elevate that. So how do you do self-care? What do you do to take care of yourself as you're mothering mothers and bringing new life into this world?
Thank you for that. And I love this question. And I love the answers that your guests have given, too. You know, I am really, like, I know I seem like a person that likes people and likes to be around people. I love to be alone. So I try to spend, like, you know, get up early enough to where nobody's up yet or around, so I can be by myself and not talk and not interact and just kind of, like, deal with what I woke up with. And I'll use that time to kind of, like, pray. I'll also do some meditation. Sometimes I'll try to sit, like, if it's warm enough, I'll sit, you know, I have a roof area, so I'll sit kind of there. And then I try to reflect. I take my time. I don't like to rush, you know, my mornings. You know, that's really when I kind of set the tone for my day. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely say that a big piece of my self-care practice is also not so much what I do, but what I don't do. Mm. I'm really, and I know you're big on this too, is like this life edit, right? Like of kind of, you know, saying no and, yeah. and making sure to just, you know, stay really, really tight with what's aligned with my intention. Mm. And a lot of time that means that when you're examining those things, something that feels like, oh, this is awesome, but you know you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, saying no to that and knowing that, you know what, the right configuration and the exact, you know, culmination of whatever this is will show up for me in a way that I can, you know, handle it and in a time frame that I can take it on. Because if this is not the right time, or if I feel pushed, or, you know, it's too much, and I'm good at pushing, as you know, but at certain points, it's like you have to give. And I think you're a great example of this, too. It's like we can be on planes and trains and automobiles and whatever, but at a certain point, you know, there's a built-in rest.
Yep.
Always.
Yep.
So even when there's a lot of travel, there's just rest, right? So to me, it's about, like, punctuating the day like that, like thinking about in anticipating my needs and figuring out when I'm going to want to break and just building that in and not overscheduling, you know. And that doesn't mean that sometimes I won't have, like, back-to-back-to-back, but even when I'm doing back-to-back-to-back, it's what gives me joy that I'm doing back-to-back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I might have a really packed day, but I feel energized at the end. And then I might have a day where I have to do something that's so intense that even though it's one thing, I don't schedule around it because I know what it's going to take of me to do. So it's like figuring out that balance. And I think we all need to do that for ourselves. Like what tires me, what inspires me, right? Like what allows me to, you know, feel more fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And that carries you more through the day, that gives you more energy. And the things that, you know, you have to do that there's some things that we just have to do, right? And those things, I make sure that I build in some portals of self-renewal around those areas, right? Like I make sure that I build in, whether it's like I'm going to go for a walk, or I'm going to eat lunch outside, or I'm going to take a phone call from a friend, or I'm going to read a book, or, you know, whatever that is, right? I figure that out, and that's moment to moment. And that's, to me, that's real self-care, is when
yes.
we can, on a moment-to-moment basis, check in with ourselves and figure out, okay, what do I need to feel most fulfilled in this moment, and what's going to take care of my needs right now? You know, that's how I try to do it, so that it's not just like, oh, let me go bubble bath away my problem.
Right. Right.
It's also fun, but, like, to be honest, it's like, you know, a lot of it is just, you know, I don't have to feel like a buildup of issues if I'm, like, on a moment-to-moment making sure that I don't put too much on the plate, right? Like, just like, okay, you know what, that can stay, or let me just eat that, or let me just leave that alone entirely. And I know that this is something that we have to do, and we get more refinement with, and you do this so beautifully as well. And I love that you also share this with the community, like how you edit and how you, you know, I'm really, really busy right now, but I'm also doing this. And so it's really important for people to see the folks that they look up to, how they do these practices. So I love that you also, you know, share the insights of how you stay so focused, but also how you can get like 93 keynotes in one day, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Ah, listen, you're awesome. You're awesome. You're awesome. I'm so glad you were able to come on Rant and drop some gems on the people. And really, this is really insightful because I don't think people talk about Black women's maternal health enough, and we don't have enough doulas. So you are serving as representation that does not really exist in droves for us. So thank you for that.
Thank you for that and for the acknowledgement. But also I want to remind people really quickly that this is not our stuff. Like, our ancestors were the ones who were delivering all the babies. We were the ones who birthed this nation. So this is our work. So even though you might think or you might see like more white women out here doing this work, this is our work to reclaim. So if you feel in any particular way called to do it, please pursue it. Because like Lovie said, we do need more Black women out here supporting and doing this work, because we need people who look like us to support us and who understand our unique needs. It's so critical. So thank you, Lovie, as well for also just inviting this type of conversation in, because I also believe in what you said, that, you know, our Black media and our, you know, just places where our stories are being told, we're not getting to tell our own story, right?
Right.
So, and I love that you bring people here who get to tell their story the way they want to tell their story versus someone else telling their story. So I'm just thankful because I learned so much about people that we would never learn about if they weren't, you know, in conversation with you in this way. So thank you for creating a platform to share and to be girlfriends and to just catch up, because it really is soothing.
I'm so glad to hear that. That was my mission for Rant, was to have conversation with just with interesting people and with my friends who happen to be interesting people like you. So
exactly.
It is,
and
really,
we get to feel like we're with you every day. We get to feel like we're with you in each conversation. Literally how you talk to people. And I just can't wait to hear. I'm like, okay, this thing happened. I can't wait to hear Lovie talk about it. So, you know what I mean? So thank you for that. Because this is also part of my self-care, you know, like listening to podcasts like yours. Like, this is, you know, we have to see that there are things that make us strong. This is one of the things that I feel like fortifies me too, just like listening to you. There's other people too that I listen to, but I'm grateful to have friends who actually create content that I want to consume and not just strangers that I like to consume. So,
yes,
yeah, thank you.
Yes, yes, yes. And people can follow you all over social at Glow Maven. Y'all want to follow Latham, because she literally, just following her makes you feel like you're a better person. Because sometimes she'll post something about, like, I need you to breathe today. You're like, you're right, I actually haven't really been breathing today. So, yes, following you is my part of my self-care. You are awesome for joining Rants. Thank you for being a part of the Rants fam now.
I'm so excited.
always cheering for you and always looking forward to what you do next. And thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you, sis. Thank you, too.
And we will talk soon.
All right, boo.
Bye.
Bye.
Yo, shout out to Latham Thomas for joining me. Please follow her on social media, her Instagram and Twitter, all her personal pages are at Glow Maven, GLOW. MAVEN. She's amazing. Follow her. It just calms your spirit. Also, follow her company, Mama Glow, on Facebook and Instagram. That's MAMAGLOW. And on Twitter, it's MamaGlow_MGFF. Right? So you want to make sure you're following them. They do a lot of work around educating us around maternal health. Also, much love to Chicago Recording Company for partnering with me on this. Subscribe to Rants and Randomness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcast fix. Please rate it and share. If you love it, share it on social and let people know about Rants. If you have any questions for me, want to give any feedback, show some love, email me at lovierants@gmail.com. And as always, you can follow me on social media. I am @lovie everywhere. See you on the next episode.